Ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. Morning, everyone. I'm Ed Senez. We'll do some formal introductions in a minute. Just a quick show of hands from yesterday. Who saw the BI presentation? Introduction to BI with C. Young and Carolyn Chung. A lot of you did. Excellent. So that was fun with BI. This is going to be the not fun with BI presentation because we're going to be getting into the bits and bytes as to how to actually deploy SharePoint out into your farm, into your SharePoint environment, try and work with you around some of the ins and outs of that. Just to give you a magnitude, now you can find this in the BI booth, so I'm trying to drive a little traffic to our booth down at the Microsoft Center. But this is the BI ecosystem. They have a nice little 15-point diagram, and that's basically what we're going to be talking about today. So here's the good news story. For the end users, the business users, it's extremely easy to use now relative to what it has been in the past. For us, with the infrastructure part of things, there's a couple things we need to do to get it going. So that's really what our talk is about today. And without further ado, I'll jump into the formal part of the presentation. Just making sure everybody's in the right room. So this is configuring your SharePoint farm with for business intelligence. So I'm Ed Senez. In my spare time, I do other things besides BI. It's kind of a boring topic, but it's, as Carolina pointed out to us, it's getting to be fun. So when I'm not having fun with BI, I'm having fun doing other things. My colleague, John White, I'll do a quick introduction.
Same thing. Yeah, I'm the CTO, co-founder of Unlimited Viz, which is a SharePoint company focused on BI. SharePoint Server MVP, so I come from the SharePoint world, not the SQL world, so I can speak your language. I'm also a SQL Server VTS, which serves us well in that capacity. And for fun, I like to spend my time under the water.
So in terms of our agenda today, again, we're really going to be focusing on the infrastructure, the building out of the various bits. We're going to talk specifically about what's new. So for those of you who have actually deployed the BI components into SharePoint, we're going to talk about some of the new features and functionality. We're going to get into scaling because, as the user community starts to grow with regard to BI, you're going to end up with a new problem on your hands and that you got to scale out your farm. And so how do you do that? And then normally we talk about best practices, but I think some of this technology is pretty fresh, and to advocate ourselves as having these are the best practices might be a little bit arrogant, so we're going to call it little known facts. So it's kind of Cliff Clavin of Cheers for those of you who are follow the TV series. We're going to talk about some of the things that we've run into as we've done these deployments out into some of our test and real environments. To get started, we're going to start with a demo. It's actually kind of an interesting storyboard here. I'll just leave it back there. Nope, go back. Thank you.
Okay,
there we go. So we're going to start in Excel. And I know this isn't an office conference, SharePoint conference. It's also a BI talk. But what's interesting about Excel is it's become the ubiquitous end-user platform, and it has been, quite frankly, for some time, in regard to doing and driving business intelligence. You'll notice this is actually John with his MVP shirt on there, diving with bull sharks 90 feet down in, was it Playa de Carma, I believe it was. They have this swim with sharks thing. We actually do this for a living, and it's interesting. But what's interesting about sharks as well is, I'll preface this with no sharks were harmed in the making of this presentation. What's interesting about sharks is you got to be smart about them, right? So you really want to know a little bit more about data with regard to sharks. So we're going to switch me over here. We're going to start. We're BI guys, and what better thing to do than to go to the internet and harvest yourself some shark data? So believe it or not, there's a site out there that actually has captured every piece of every shark attack since 1554, and they've recorded it. And here you can see we have our Excel spreadsheet. It's got about 4,900 rows of data. I'll just go back to the beginning. So know, you can see the years here, 1554, 1555. So I don't know about the integrity of this data, but it's probably a lot like the data in your organizations from an integrity point of view. There's a lot of missing data. There's a whole bunch of stuff here that's, you know, not very good. We actually have the link on the page to actually download this file. It is kind of comical to walk through some of the scenarios where people were attacked by sharks. And I think a few Darwin Awards are in good order for this. But that notwithstanding, the data is the data, and it really doesn't tell us much so far. So just to be clear, this is just Excel. This is just data in a worksheet. What I'm going to show you right now is the fact that, you know, there's nothing up my sleeves here. We don't have any data connections that are bound to this sheet yet. So what we're going to do is simply insert a Power View report. So for those of you who saw this yesterday, you know, great new utility within Excel. So previously only available within SharePoint 2010, but now available in the Excel client. And so what I'm going to do is I've got all of the data, so all those columns. What has happened right now is Excel has actually gone and tried to figure out, you know, what has gone on. So let me go back to my worksheet here. Back to my worksheet here and look at connections. So what's physically happened behind the scenes? One is that a data connection has been made to my data. So PowerView has gone out and in the background already created a data connection to my data. It's all domiciled within the workbook. It becomes important because when we get into SharePoint, some of that data will be domiciled within other systems like SQL Server and so forth. But it's also built out a data model, and that's really what we're going to go play with right now. So we've got the data, and it's in here, and there's only a few pieces of data that I want to start analyzing right now. I want to know the case in the country. And I don't really care when stuff happened. And I want to know how many occurrences. And of course, there's a bunch of blank data in there previously. So I want to know how many occurrences of this the shark attack has taken place. So, you know, I can scroll through here and I can, you know, quickly surmise what has happened. But I'm more of a graphical type of person. So the thing I want to do is go in here and insert a map. And so what's happened now is that the data through the model has interpreted those locations, those countries, as data points. And it's gone out to Bing Maps and pulled down the vector coordinates for them. So I now have an understanding a little bit here about what has been what's being displayed on the screen. So there's now 1,700 shark attacks that happened in North America. You know, I really care about the fatal ones, right? Because, you know, if it's just a flesh wound, that's one thing. But, you know, if you die, that's a whole different insurance policy. So so I want to show this to my carrier and say, look, you know, I'm going to dive into safe waters. And, you know, don't worry about John's photo over there with sharks swimming around him. The key man policies, prices are going up. So as I do hover over or click through, I can see the data refresh. And so that's pretty interesting. Now I'm already, within a few mouse clicks, getting some information about this data. So, you know, the one thing I don't have here is a time perspective. You know, is the problem getting worse or better? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to drag a time sequence onto this. And I'm going to say, well, really, you know, do I really care about the stuff that happened in 1554? Why don't we move our data up? And now the data is automatically refreshing here. But you can see this little slider bar on your screen. It might look a little bit bigger. Mine is a little harder to read. So really, that's probably not the best user interface that I want for this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a grid here, say, from 1990 to less than 2012, because 2012 isn't over yet. I want to see what's happening. So now I have a nice little way to drive through my data. So again, I can find out where things are occurring. I can see, well, North America is a pretty big place, and, you know, concurrently there's quite a lot of stuff going on. But I want to see what kind of problems we may be having over time. So what I'm going to do is click down here and go in and insert another piece of data. So I want to know the number of cases, and I want to do this by year. And again, I want my case count to be not blank, and we'll exhibit that as a line graph. And we'll drop the line down to the x-axis. And now from 1990 to 2011-ish, we're seeing a small trend upwards. And that could be, you know, it's either Darwin Awards or not, and, you know, fatal and non-fatal. But you see also that, you know, this map and this graph and this filter are all naturally being driven together. I mean, how hard was that previously? This is just a natural user interface. So it's an exponential increase in the ability for people to create these things. But of course, being a BI guy, you can't stop there. We want to go farther. I actually want to drill through into these countries and find out, you know, where are these shark attacks going? Again, we're talking about a large, large piece of geography here. So what I'm going to do is open up PowerPivot. And what PowerPivot is sort of like my designer for all of this. And so I'll just grab something here. So again, back to my data not being very good. We have, you know, the country, we have area, we have location, but they're not very good referential points. What I really want is kind of the region. If I can get down to a region with my kind of dodgy data, it'd probably be a good thing. So what I'm going to do is run a concatenate function that's going to take my area and my country and put them together. And I'm not going to bore you with how to actually key this in. But you notice what happens. It's smart enough, PowerPivot is smart enough not only to have the data, but to do a fill down on the information. So now I've got this, and I'm going to call my column region. And with just a couple of mouse clicks and a very simple formula, and let me just point this out. So for those of you who have built Excel formulas, and I've seen a plethora of them and some really artistic, you know, people sometimes, you know, just open ASP.NET, don't do it in Excel. But for those very clever people, they'll be very happy to know that the DAX expression language that we're using here is very Excel-like. It has the IntelliSense, the type ahead type of capabilities, and you can go and build out some very interesting functionality. So we've got a region here. Now, the other thing that I found, we just lost our screen.
Both of them.
Woo-hoo. All right. The demo gremlins are at us. Okay. So one of the other things that as an end user, I'd find annoying is having to, you know, go in, and every time I had that case, I had to change it to count. So what I can just do here is just go into that column and call it count, and we're going to rename it to attacks. So now it'll appear in my worksheet as something I can call. So now I've got a region, I've got attacks. Now, area and location have become irrelevant to me from a data modeling point of view, so I want to hide those from the client tools. I go ahead and do that. And a couple other things that happened. Remember I said it built a data model in the background. What was it really doing? It looked and it saw that country, if you can see that, it says country. We're going to suggest that because all these names kind of match to country, we're doing pattern matching here, we're just going to call this country. And that's how it was able to draw the map. It was able to go and look at this and say, yeah, I think this data has a country in it, so we're going to do that. So we're going to help the model along because we've defined a new category and it has no idea what it is. So I can go and define that category now. Not as province. As place. Okay. So I'm done. I've updated my data, so all I have to save this off. And what PowerView is saying is, hey, the data model that I gave you that I, you know, did as good a job as I could with has been changed. What I want to do now is refresh it. So now if I click on my map and I look, I see that I have a region that's now appeared, and we also have the value of attacks. Again, it's a calculated member of this data set. So now if I pull region down here, it will appear, and let's just drill into Australia, and now I've got drill through on my map. Right. So not a really complicated effort, and this was all done in Excel. So why am I telling you this at a SharePoint conference? Because now I take my Excel workbook, and I dump it into SharePoint. And I do this on purpose. Yes, I am using Chrome here. It's browser agnostic. This is coming out of SharePoint and rendering eventually on screen. It's because it's Chrome, right? Slower. But just to show you, so this is, I'm now in Excel Services, right? This is coming out of Excel Services in Chrome, out of Office 365, by the way. So this is all done through Office 365 client. Good? All right. So, very quickly, where has BI come from? So we have kind of the organizational BI. This is the curated data that the guys with the white lab coats are running around your company saying, don't touch my data, leave it alone. And then you have the personal data. It's all of us business users that are out there that are trying to get at that data, and what tools do we use to do that. And then along came SharePoint in the middle, and it's kind of the middle ground for the sharing of your corporate data and your BI data. So what are the tool sets that we have? We have, you know, the traditional Microsoft SQL Server tool set, the Office tool set, and the SharePoint tool set. Okay, so I'm not going to elaborate on this because we're going to go very deep into how we're going to build it. What I will point out to you, however, is that as a courtesy, we included a whole bunch of hidden slides in our deck. Our deck has like 70 or 80 slides. So there will be a number of things that we may skip over during this talk. So, you know, in so doing, you will have that deck to download and be able to look through some of the step-by-steps as we gloss over certain things.
All right. I'll take her for a while. Okay, I get the boring part of the presentation. We're mostly focused here on SharePoint 2013, being, you know, release of 2013 and all. A number of the steps, however, a number of the things we're talking about in terms of deploying your BI assets do apply to previous versions. So first of all, it's important to understand some of the what are the differences in 2013. And I think the single largest difference is the fact that Excel itself is including this X velocity engine. So what's an X velocity engine? Has anybody heard of VertiPack, the term VertiPack? Okay, not too many. VertiPack was the engine that was included with PowerPivot. X-Velocity is the same thing. It's been renamed. And I'll also be referring to the term tabular model at various points during the presentation. I also mean essentially the same thing. So back in 2010, if we had Excel 2010 and we installed PowerPivot, what we would get is that model available to us. We would get that model, but we'd also get the editor. So when you saw Ed adding that that calculated measure for attacks and adding that calculated column, that's the editor that lets us do that. That's really, PowerPivot was the combination of the two things. Now, in Excel, not only is the engine included, but PowerPivot's included by default too. So you don't have to do any separate download. You can just turn it on. It's a COM add-in. It has to be turned on. You won't see it by default. But what is PowerPivot in this world now that the engine lives in Excel? Well, it's really just the editor now. So instead of being two things, it's one thing. It's going to be important to get this stuff straight because in my mind, some of the terminology in here can be really, really confusing, and that's kind of the whole point of this talk. As well, as you saw, PowerView has been included in Excel, and that was previously available only to reporting services, and only if you had an analysis services server that was running with a tabular engine as opposed to a multi-dimensional engine, which is a traditional analysis services engine. So again, analysis services, when it's running a tabular engine, is using this X-velocity engine. Okay? So what's happened on the SharePoint side? I take the model I've built in Excel, and I want to deploy it out and share it with my team. What changes have happened in SharePoint? Well, we have this thing now. It's called analysis services SharePoint mode. Okay? So again, let's jump back to 2010. There was a product called PowerPivot for SharePoint, and it also was two things. It was literally analysis services running in tabular mode. It was a special instance of it, so it didn't have a lot of the UI you'd typically associate with analysis services. And it was also a service application in SharePoint that would manage the refresh of the data in the stored workbooks automatically, so you can nightly refresh your data. And there was a Power Pivot gallery as well that deployed out to your site collections. That, too, has been separated out. I can now stand up an analysis services SharePoint mode, and that's that same engine I'm talking about, server on its own. It does not have to be installed on a SharePoint server anymore. And that's a really big difference. That matters from a licensing standpoint, and it matters from a scale standpoint, because Excel services connects directly to that when it needs to use interactivity in a Power Pivot embedded model. You don't have to install Power Pivot for SharePoint anymore. But if you don't, you won't get automatic refresh. But it is an option for you. The nice part is, from a scaling standpoint, you don't have to load up your SharePoint server with the calculations required to work with these models. You can sit them off on the side and load balance them out. You can have any number of these things. As well, there's some important changes to per-user authentication. We're going to get into that a little bit later. Some enhancements to PowerView itself. For example, mapping wasn't previously available, so what you just saw was not available before, actually, SQL Server 2012 SP1, which released last week. And there's been some enhancements to performance point around filters and styling, et cetera. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of it. How do we roll this stuff up? Well, let's first talk about what do you need to get going from a licensing standpoint, primarily. I'm going to look at this in terms of three major product families. We've got the Excel Services family, which includes Power Pivot, et cetera. We've got the Reporting Services family, and we've got Performance Point. So to start with, on the client, because we can do most of what you just saw in that demo was done in the client, you need at least an Office Pro Plus license. Home and Student isn't going to cut it. If you've got a Surface, don't expect to see that model when you fire up Excel. Two reasons. It's a COM add-in, so it's not going to run, but it's not the right license for it. As I mentioned, the X-Velocity model is included. It's not on by default, which means it's not the default storage engine. That X-Velocity engine is a read-only engine, and it can store a tremendous amount of data. But when you're storing data in Excel, that's still stored in Excel in a regular fashion, but when you work with it, it gets copied into that model for analysis. And again, Power Pivot is included, but must be turned on, and same thing with Power View. And they're in the COM add-in section. When we want to share it out, we need to use Excel Services. Excel Services is the tool that does workbook calculations for us on the server, but it also renders workbooks out in a browser. Excel Services has a SharePoint licensing requirement. You need to have the Enterprise Cal to use it. It's included on the SharePoint media, so it's fairly straightforward for SharePoint administrators to install. If you're running the White Wizard, it's a checkbox. It deploys there's the gray wizard and the white wizard, right? The gray one's the first setup, and then the white one is when you configure your SharePoint farm. The white one's evil. It deploys as a SharePoint service application. But if you want to interact with these models, if you want to click on slicers and do analysis, you're going to need it connected to an instance of analysis services SharePoint mode. All right? So what do you need for analysis services SharePoint mode? You need at least SQL Server, BI, or Enterprise. Standard's not going to cut it. It installs as a standalone machine, or it can still install on your SharePoint server. Nothing wrong with doing that, I mean, if your scale allows for it. But you do have the option of putting it on a standalone machine. And Excel Services performs all the load balancing. And that's different from most SharePoint shared services, in which the load balancing is handled internally. Excel Services, the service application itself, is doing that load balancing. And finally, Power Pivot for SharePoint doesn't have any additional licensing requirements over top of analysis services. It does require analysis services SharePoint mode and Excel Services. It deploys as a SharePoint service application on a SharePoint server, on a typical application server. If you're running Office 365, and really who here isn't, this stuff works. They've turned this stuff on. We've got, depending on your license, obviously, I think it's any of the eCals, you have Excel services available to you. And out in the cloud, there is an analysis services SharePoint mode farm that's been stood up to support this. And you actually saw that. When Ed showed you when Ed showed you the Shark demo running in SharePoint, that was actually running on Office 365. There have been a number of versions of Power Pivot and the X-Velocity engine over the last year or two, and they've got some compatibility issues. I'm not going to walk through all these in detail. That would be boring. But suffice it to say, you've got your typical downward compatibility type matrix. The one thing to call out here is if you're going to be building models with Excel, you'd better be using SharePoint 2013 if you want to share them out. They don't work in the previous versions of Power Pivot for SharePoint 2010. So, reporting services, and I'm talking about reporting services integrated mode, which means SharePoint integrated. There is a standalone version of reporting services that, well, I never talk about. What do you need to run it? You need at least SharePoint Foundation. It doesn't have very onerous licensing requirements. SharePoint Foundation is free. It deploys as a service application as of 2012, SQL Server 2012. Screen went away?
Yep, come back. Woo-hoo.
All right. The gremlins are here. It does have a licensing requirement from a SQL Server standpoint. You need at least the standard edition of SQL Server. There is a reporting services free version, express mode, but it only runs as a standalone. It doesn't work integrated mode. If you want to take advantage of some of the advanced features in reporting services, you're going to need either the BI license or the enterprise license for SQL Server. And some of those features are self-service subscriptions, data alerting. You can be alerted automatically whenever data changes on a report, and PowerView in reporting services. And as well, if you want to use PowerView in reporting services, you're going to need to be connecting to an instance of analysis services running the tabular engine. Not in SharePoint mode, but running the tabular engine. I hope that's all real clear to everybody. We will be taking questions at the end, I promise. They are effectively the same. Analysis services in SharePoint mode is a special instance of the tabular mode, okay? And the models that are stored within it are created automatically by Excel services. So when you first upload a worksheet to a library and interact with it, it creates a model in that analysis services instance. If you update that workbook, it's going to create a new model. So it's not something you're going to really want to connect to, although you can. You can have multiple engines on the same server, if that helps. Okay. So, finally, performance point. Don't need to spend much time on that. That needs enterprise mode SharePoint. It's also a service application. It has a few assets within it that are unique. Analytic charts and analytic grids, in particular. Has anyone ever heard of ProClarity? Whoa. Yeah.
We have a BI room.
Yeah. ProClarity is the company that Microsoft purchased a few years ago and embedded that technology with, well, not originally embedded. It was kind of off to the side. But now it's completely embedded within Performance Point. It's that ability to drill down and drill around charts and tables that you see on the screen. That's unique only to Performance Point. And if you want to use those, you need to be connected to an analysis services instance of any kind. It doesn't matter which mode it's running in. All right. So we're going to walk through a few screens and just show you some of the steps required in setting this up in your farm. But I do want to point out that some of these assets come from the Office team, and some of these assets come from the SQL Server team. All right. The stuff that comes from the Office team is going to be on the SharePoint disk, and we're probably already familiar with it. Excel services and Performance Point, being SharePoint administrators, we kind of know this stuff. It shows we don't necessarily know what to do with it, but we know that it's there. It's sitting there on our farm. The stuff that comes from the SQL team is on the SQL disk, right? And it hasn't necessarily been set up in our environment. It's not necessarily clear how to do that. And I have seen an awful lot of confusion in the field about where you should put this stuff. And that's what I want to just cover that off in the next couple of slides. So if you consider your standard, very, very simple SharePoint farm, you've got your SQL Server and you've got a SharePoint server with all of the services running on it. It's fairly standard for small organizations. It comes, and you might have a SharePoint administrator and a SQL DBA, and you know they meet for coffee every once in a while, but they don't really talk to each other. It comes time to get some of these BI assets out there. We want to get up and running with reporting services, SharePoint mode, maybe Power Pivot for SharePoint. And it's on the SQL disk, so naturally you think, okay, well, that's going to need to go on the SQL server. Well, it doesn't take long to find out that's not going to work. We need SharePoint bits to be able to install this stuff. So what invariably happens is this. The SQL administrator will run out and get the SharePoint media, install SharePoint on the SQL box, and join it to the farm. And this is all kinds of wrong. It's, well, if you're not used to, first of all, if you're not used to managing a multi-server SharePoint farm, there's a fair amount of administrative overhead associated in doing so. And it's a bit of a performance suck on my SQL box, quite frankly. So obviously the correct answer is you take the SQL media, you put it in the SharePoint box, and you install those shared services on a SharePoint server, be it an application server specifically or whatever. And I want to call out here that it raises a point. I've seen some confusion on it as well. You can be running SQL reporting services and Power Pivot for SharePoint from SQL Server 2012, SP1, and have a SQL Server 2005 server as your 2008 server as your backend database, whatever matches your SharePoint requirements. The two don't go together whatsoever. So you can get up and running with all these really cool BI assets without having to bug your SQL DBA to get the SQL Server updated.
So to be clear, mm-hmm. when you go for coffee with your SQL DBA, say, don't worry about it, just give me the disk.
Yes.
Okay.
Precisely. They may not cough it up, but hey. So how do you do this? So I'm going to run through the next couple of screens. I'm installing Analysis Services SharePoint mode. I could also be installing Analysis Services SharePoint mode along with Power Pivot for SharePoint. And the distinction is, if I'm installing it on a server that doesn't have SharePoint on it, I'm going to get Analysis Services SharePoint mode. If I'm installing it on a server that does have SharePoint on it, I'm going to get Analysis Services SharePoint mode and Power Pivot for SharePoint, the add-in. Okay, I got a quick question. That's correct. If we install Power Pivot for SharePoint on a SharePoint server, we're going to get Analysis Services SharePoint mode, and the answer is yes. So if you don't want that, you're going to see this in a second anyway. But if you don't want that, you need to just install the add-in, and you don't do that with a SQL install disk. It's confusing. That's why I wanted to do this talk.
We're going to have many blog posts on this, by the way, too. So.
Here's what it looks like. You run SQL install. If you've got a BI or an Enterprise edition, you don't see this with standard, you can pick SQL Server Power Pivot for SharePoint. Nowhere do you see the words Analysis Services SharePoint mode, but that's what it's talking about, okay? Clear as mud, isn't it? Couple of other things to call out. It's gonna ask for an account to use for its identity. You gotta use a domain account. You can't use a local account. It means a standalone SharePoint server is not going to work. And don't skip this screen over. This is the administrator screen, basically what users to add as the administrator. If you're going to use some of these per-user authentication capabilities that I'm going to show you here in a few minutes, the service accounts that will be using them need to be administrators on this Analysis Services instance. All right? The SharePoint Farm account also needs to be in here if you want to use it with reporting services and PowerView. All right. So now that we've done this install, and if we've installed on a standalone machine, we need to now go over to a SharePoint server if we want Power Pivot, and install this add-in. It's a download. It's also on the SQL disk, but you got to go and dig for it. Okay. So you would install this on an application server in SharePoint to get that service application. And once you install it, you're going to get this icon. This is a 2012 desktop, obviously, in previous versions of Windows that shows up in the SQL Server configuration section. And it's the Power Pivot configuration tool. Just got to get a quick drink. And what it does is it runs and it inspects your farm, sees where you're at, sees what you need, and finds out what it needs to know. And in this case, it's basically saying you need to specify the credentials for the unattended service account. Great.
Question?
Mm-hmm. The setup account.
So what's the correct value for the farm service account?
It's the setup account, whatever you would use to install your SharePoint farm. So everybody's got, this is going to be too long a discussion to get into, but you know, everybody's got different opinions on what you want for service accounts. But typically, you're going to have an account you use when you install add-ons and things like that to your SharePoint farm. That's the one. Use that one. This isn't the service account or anything like that, okay? Once you get everything configured, I also want to point out, by the way, you want to change the name of your default PowerPivot application. If you accept all the defaults, the default name of the default PowerPivot application is default PowerPivot application. And if I'm looking for PowerPivot in the list of items, I'm looking for P, not D. Call me stupid. Change the name of your database too. It does the same thing, and it throws an ugly GUID on the end, and you don't want that. GUIDs are bad. When you're ready, you hit the validate button. It checks everything out. It sees if it's going to work. And what it's doing behind the scenes is building a big, long PowerShell script that's going to run. And you run it, and it gets done. And once that's finished, I got to flip over to... Yeah. Once that's finished...
We're broadcasting.
All right. Hello. All right. We can go into the service application section. And we should see Power Pivot service application here. That's great. So let's have a look at how that's set up. You gotta wait a second. Anybody have any good jokes? I got one. SQL query walks into a bar.
So the question is, common pitfalls when you're running, the configuration tool.
That'd be too long a topic to get into right now, and we could talk about it after, but I have a blog post on that, a whole long blog post on that, and there are a few, quite a few. All right, we got an error. We don't know what happened, something went wrong. Could you please try that again? Okay, can anybody guess what would happen if I tried again? Problem here is that the configuration tool, this kind of answers your questions, this is one of the pitfalls. It doesn't really work. One of the things it doesn't...
We may want to edit that out of this. It mostly works.
It adds the service account with proper permissions to the admin database, but it doesn't give them all the correct permissions. It needs SharePoint shell access. I better put my glasses on. Once you set that on, you're good to go. All right, so if I hit F5, what we should see is a blank PowerPivot workbook. And this is because the PowerPivot service application uses PowerPivot itself to basically report on itself. I'm just going to bring this up. Or it might not behave. Oh, you want the rest of it? SQL query walks into a bar, walks up to a waiter and says, "Mind if I join these two tables?" Sorry.
It's the only clean joke he knows. Yes.
The service account for PowerPivot needed to be granted access. You're right, good question. Needed to be granted access to the administration database. Basically the central admin's database.
Yes.
That's correct. I didn't say that. That gets done properly. This is the only thing you have to fix. You also need to make a couple of changes to Excel services. I've already done that here. And if we go into Excel services, because the workbooks that the service application uses are stored within Central Admin, Central Admin needs to be a trusted file location in Excel services, and that's not done by default. So you need to set that up. And in the interest of time, I'm not going to walk you through all of that stuff, but one of the things you should do in your Excel services trusted file location settings, there's a couple of bits you want to fiddle with. The default size for the workbooks is set to 10 megabytes, and that's not really big enough for working with any kind of models. I'd suggest you set that to whatever you've got the default upload size for your file set to. 50 megabytes is the standard default. In addition, there's a setting to warn users on refresh. What happens when you put one of these workbooks in SharePoint is it literally deploys that model out into Analysis Services, and Excel Services is connecting to that instance of Analysis Services all the time. That's considered a data connection, and users get warned when that happens. And if they're using it a lot, that's going to get really annoying. As well, down here you see this data model settings. If you have multiple Analysis Services servers and you want to use load balancing, that's where you go and specify the names. You just put them in there. Question. No, if I understand you. So is there any way to not have that performed in the Central Admin database? Not that I'm aware of, anyway. I shouldn't say no, not that I'm aware of. OK. At that point in time, you should be able to deploy a Power Pivot gallery into your site collection and work with it. So what do we need to set up reporting services in SharePoint mode? Where's the clicker? There we go. Same thing, it's a SQL install media. This time it's a SQL Server feature installation. And there are two items here that you need to select, reporting services-SharePoint and the reporting services add-in for SharePoint products. Reporting services-SharePoint, that's the service application we're talking about. And this is a SQL Server 2012 or 2012 SP1 screen. Okay? It looks a little different in prior versions. I'm just wanting to skip over a couple of things. We're running out of time. I'm going to skip over Performance Point because that's typically been deployed out into the farm. I want to talk a little bit about scaling. How does this stuff scale out? How many people in here run multi SharePoint server farms? Most of you, good. You'll know what I'm talking about, so I won't spend any time on this. But this is this is kind of your standard scale-up model. You might start with a single server farm, hopefully not. But and your first point of split out is obviously separating SQL Server from SharePoint. And then you might want to separate out your concerns. So I've got front-end server, and I've got an application server running all of my service applications. And of course, my SQL Server backend. The difference here is we also now can have, we don't have to have, but we can have this Analysis Services SharePoint mode box running over here. And again, the load balancing is controlled by Excel Services, not the core SharePoint like all the rest of the service applications. You do have the option of mixing up the roles. The slides I showed you before are kind of the standard guidance from Microsoft on how you want to set this stuff up. Depending on your workloads and patterns, you might want to put some service applications on some machines that would be considered front-end servers or not. And as well, all of these things can be scaled out extensively. So from a performance standpoint or an availability standpoint, we can have multiple instances of these. We can dedicate servers for, say, reporting services if that matters. So there's an awful lot of stuff you can do with deployment. So specifically these BI services, how do you scale them out? Well, you saw those two options when I installed reporting services just a few minutes ago. That reporting services-SharePoint service application should be installed to all of the application servers that are going to be responsible for rendering reports. Okay? The reporting services add-in should be installed on all front-end servers that users are accessing. It's what connects to the reporting services instance and to serve up the reports to the users. I would argue you should just install it on all your servers anyway because you may be using application servers for testing. And again, I've kind of done it to death, but the X Velocity Engine Analysis Services SharePoint mode can be stood up on dedicated machines, or it can also be installed on a SharePoint server if your usage doesn't require that. So, just want to go through a couple. Yeah, you're all old as me, aren't you? I want to start out with talking about per-user identities, because that's kind of like the third thing that's major here. When I talk about per-user identities, I talk about when you want to connect to the back-end data as yourself, right? And with who's heard of the double hop problem, right? Okay, I don't have to explain it. Thank you. In that case, who can tell me what that is?
Yeah. Oh, we are in the right
room. I love this room. Isn't that an awesome picture? I saw that on Facebook a couple weeks ago. I had to put it in here. Kerberos, it can be a bit of a double-edged sword. How many of you are running it? Okay, pay no attention to what I have to say. This doesn't matter to you, effectively. But we have an awful lot of people that don't run Kerberos, and we run into a lot of cases where we don't have Kerberos, but they still would like to occasionally use per-user identities. Should I explain the double hop problem for anyone? Does anyone want to know here? Okay, good. Claims is coming. Claims is available in SharePoint. It's very much a future solution. But the problem in the BI world is our back-end data doesn't tend to support claims. SQL Server doesn't support claims. So how do we get per-user identities? What did I miss? What's that? I don't know.
We don't do roadmap questions.
My badge doesn't say Microsoft. So.
Coming soon.
Yeah. I wouldn't hold my breath. So how do you achieve per-user identities? And you don't always want to use per-user identities. I'd argue in a lot of cases you should use proxy accounts. But reporting services has been able to do this for some time. And the way it does it when it's reporting against relational data is it uses this function called setUser that's available to SQL Server. And it was originally implemented for testing. But when you use setUser, you can pass in a username, and all of the functions you perform after that are executed with the permissions of that user. So what reporting services does is reporting services are running with its identity on the server. I make a request of reporting services. Reporting services connects to the back-end data as its identity, but then it uses the setUser command to run everything in that context. Everybody get that? It's cool. It's not obvious how to make that work. I'm going to hopefully show it to you here in a second. With 2013, we can do this through it with Excel services and Performance Point using the effective username parameter. And the effective username is something that analysis services supports. It's essentially the same thing. Okay? And by the way, there's a session tomorrow on implementing security for your BI applications, which would be a great place to ask that question. All right. So, just going to show you how this works. Oh yeah, I got to pop over here. Oh, we're doing okay for time. All right, and yeah, we got one. That's the service account. Here we go. No, all right. Yep. We're just going to go over to BI stuff.
Second time.
Oh, this guy. Okay, cool. No, that's the service application. Bear with me, folks. Sorry. Yeah, here, I'll go here, and I'll just go to BI stuff. There we go. So I have in here a report, and I'll just show it to you quickly. It's the per-user auth demo. And I'm going to edit this. I'm using reporting services here. That's not what I wanted to do. New UI is throwing me. Got to use the ellipsis. There we go. And we want to edit this in Report Builder. Let Report Builder come up. If it takes too long, you're going to get another joke. That's not good.
Any other questions while we're loading?
Yeah. How about
None. Which of the reporting services features are available in Office 365? None. If you like standing up servers, BI is a great place to be. Yeah, what there is available is reporting services for Azure, and you can call to that, and you can make connections between the two. But there is no such thing as reporting services integrated mode in Office 365. I haven't been made privy to that. I don't know. Not that I'm aware of. BI is very much an on-prem play. Good. Okay, I just want to show you what I've got here. I've got a little a data source that's really just a SQL command. Data set. That's a SQL command, and you can see the code here, and it basically just returns the current user. All right, and then I'm showing you the then I just display that value in this expression on my report. It's a very, very simple report. I'm not going to bother you with it. And it's using this connection file. So when I run this report, you can see, hello, Nautilus Inc., SPBI. Well, that's not who I'm logged in as. I'm logged in as Olaf Franz. Okay? Now let's have a look at this connection file. Edit data source definition. And pay close attention to this area, okay? So what we're using is stored credentials. If we use Windows authentication, that means we're using Kerberos. Again, if you've got Kerberos, you don't have this issue. We can prompt the user for credentials. Nobody likes that. We can use stored credentials, and that's what we're using. And this is basically what it reported back. And you can see down here this checkbox here, set execution context to this account. Can anybody tell me what this means? It's the set user command, but would you get that out of reading that sentence? I think this is the most confusing checkbox I've ever read in my life. It means set. It only really works in my mind if you think this, the word this, is referring to the person that is currently logged in. If you can get that, get your head around that, then that's basically it. So I'm going to click OK. I have to re-enter the password when I do that. What it should say is impersonate the currently logged in user. That's the language it should say.
And yes, we've already provided that feedback.
By the way, this account you're using needs to have one of two permissions, but extremely high level of permissions. It needs to be a sysadmin on the SQL Server, or it's got to be an owner of the database, because it's making the connection to the server and then running a lower level of permissions. All right. So now when I run this report. Hello, O'Franz. It's really that simple. Okay? So, getting ahead of myself. What can you work with here? Well, again, without going through the whole box, anything that's going to be working with relational data on SQL Server is going to that supports set user, and that's basically reporting services, is going to work. If you're going to be working against multi-dimensional data analysis services, it's going to be using the effective username parameter, and that will work. Okay? Fairly straightforward. Oh, sorry?
What doesn't work?
You can't use Excel services against relational data with per-user authentication this way. That's basically what doesn't work. Or performance point.
Question back?
Pardon me? Of access services?
Yeah. I'm afraid. UVM model of analysis services.
I don't know the answer to that. Sorry. Okay. Maybe I didn't understand. Yeah. Sorry. I can't really hear you. Well, let's save that one for the end. Okay. We'll come back to that. I also want to talk a little bit about integration. With SharePoint, I often feel the whole is, in fact, greater than the sum of the parts. When we bring a piece of functionality into SharePoint, when we bring reporting services into SharePoint, we immediately get access to the check-in and check-out document management model. We get access to SharePoint's security model, et cetera. So Both products are enhanced by them coming together. You can see this in dashboarding. On SharePoint, you can bring together pieces from multiple places. You can have Excel services, you can have reporting services, you can have pieces from Performance Point, et cetera. That view is greater than obviously looking at each one individually. But one of the strongest stories I think we have is the filter web parts, and in particular the current user filter. We can leverage SharePoint capabilities to drive reporting services parameters, or not just reporting services, but that's a good example. And we have a demo of that here. Next, Ed's going to run through.
So because of screen refresh speeds, I'm going to just, I have multiple tabs open with what I want to demo. So it's almost going to be like a slideshow here. So you're all familiar with launching a report out of just a standard SharePoint library. If you go in to launch that report, it kind of looks like this. So what this is election data. It's shown on a map. We might have result turnout and so forth, some graphical stuff. And we have these parameters here. So in this case, there's 308 parameters. And obviously, if I can avoid it, I want to shelter my end user from having to enter the parameters in for their particular region. So if I want to know what the election results are for Guelph, I'd have to go in here and pick it. Here is a my results completed page. Right? So what I've done is I've scoped these results to this particular user. Well, how did I do that? Well, I know who the logged in user is because we have that information. But the other piece of data is what district, federal district, do you belong to? Well, what I've done is I've actually gone into this person's profile and edited their profile and extended it in a way that I can include person's federal district. So right now it's scoped to Cambridge. And I can change this to a different federal district. In case you hadn't noticed by our accents, we are Canadian, so this is not U.S. data. Your elections.
Oh, Canada.
Your elections are equally interesting.
we follow.
What's interesting is we've had four elections in the time you have one. Canada has a lot of minority governments, but not currently. So, it was scoped to Cambridge. Now I've changed this employee profile. And as you'll see in the results set here, that it's going to be changed to Guelph. So how do we do that? Let's just kind of dive in here while this page is trying to refresh. I might really mess it up. I better let it finish. Any other questions while we're waiting? Yeah. Saved by the fast screen load. Edit page.
Dreamweaver problem.
It's a Dreamweaver problem, right? Excellent. Okay. So all I've done is I've taken my current user filter web part, which ships in the standard ship features of web parts, dropped it on the page, and tied it to the parameters of my report. And if I can scroll up here, scroll. Thank you. And so it's doing two things. It's identified who the current user is, but I've also selected a SharePoint profile, and all the profile information is available to me. And this particular federal district item is the one I'm using. So we really want to show you this for a couple of reasons. Number one, all this sexy new stuff is great. Don't forget about reporting services. And I've seen a lot of instances where people have spent an inordinate amount of time authoring thousands and thousands of reports when all they have to do is drop a few parameters and drop a few filters on the page, and now you're managing one report instead of multiple reports. So that's the business value of going through this little exercise.
As well, you need to get, in this case, you need to have your user profile service up and running, working, extended out properly. So you need to pay some attention to that. It's going to be greater than the sum of its parts, but your farm needs to be ready for it. It's like the manager field, right? How many people have a good manager field built out in Active Directory? When you light up SharePoint, you can get that great organization tool in 2010. Well, you're only going to get that if your data is any good. So, just two more slides, folks. We've talked an awful lot about using SharePoint to surface back-end data. What about SharePoint data itself? How do we report on SharePoint data itself? How do we analyze SharePoint data itself? Well, reporting services does it natively, right? You can build a reporting service to report, connect to SharePoint data. Please don't. SharePoint isn't great for querying large amounts of data. We all know about the constraints and limits and boundaries for SharePoint. And when you look at the way the database is structured behind the scene, you understand why. Like any other database system, it's a good idea to take the data out of it and put it in some kind of a data warehouse. And you can do this. There is a CodePlex, so using SSIS, SQL Server Integration Services, which is Microsoft's ETL, Extract, Transform, and Load tool. It doesn't have an out-of-the-box connector for SharePoint, but there is a great CodePlex project out there that we've used to great effect to get that data out of SharePoint. And here's a good example of where you might want to do that. If you've got a lot of workflows running, and everybody know about the workflow history list problem, and you get 20,000, 30,000, your workflow history list just grows and grows and grows. You don't want to delete that stuff because you want it for auditing purposes. Well, get it out of there. Suck it out with SSIS, put it in SQL Server, and then you could use reporting services surfaced in SharePoint to report back on that very same data. It's a much cleaner way to go about that. So there's a URL to the CodePlex project for this. As well, there's a link in the slides to a great blog on how to set this stuff up. And finally, the health analyzer. How many people have a red bar like this at the top of their central administration screen? And the rest of you are lying. Okay, yellow. It's a problem. It's actually a great tool. I think it's a great tool, but you do get too many of these false positives. And the problem is with the rules. Well, the good news is you can go in and tweak these rules. When you install Power Pivot for SharePoint, you're going to get a whole new set of rules that are wrong. A lot more reasons for that thing to go wrong. But some of them are right. Especially when you install Power Pivot for 2012, there are a few rules in there that are looking for specific versions of DLLs, et cetera, that have been upgraded and since, so they're failing. What you really want to do is go in there, find out which rules are relevant, keep them going, and turn off the ones that aren't. And if you're interested, I've got a blog post on exactly how to, on a number of the items you want to watch out for. I would never say it's comprehensive, but it goes through an awful lot of items. Finally, we would encourage everyone to please fill out their evaluations. And questions. Happy to take any questions now.
If you'd be so kind as to use the microphones.
Yeah.
I know they may seem daunting, but it saves us repeating the questions and we can capture it on audio.
Come on up.
Is the effective user available for 2010?
Is the effective user? No.
Thank you.
That's easy. So, yeah, the microphone's not turned on. He asked, if you have an existing SharePoint 2010 farm with Power Pivot loaded up on it, what's the upgrade path? You're going to load up your service application. Well, you're going to have an analysis services instance on those machines. So you're probably going to want to install both on those same machines. But you can just run through the SQL setup. Like, if you run SQL upgrade, if you're aware of the upgrade option on the SQL Server installation disk, you'll run through that. That's going to update the bits. Then you're going to go and rerun the configuration tool, and that's going to update all the parts in SharePoint for you, and it'll just take care of it. Yes. It will update the existing analysis services instance, and it will add the required solution bits to your SharePoint farm. So is it now possible to use Power Pivot enabled spreadsheets in a claims enabled web app? I don't know the answer to that, I'm afraid. Everything is claims. In 2013, everything is claims all the way back to the service application. But beyond that, when we're refreshing data, I don't see any reason why not, because it doesn't need to go out to that back end data. The data is actually included in the model. But I wouldn't take that as an authoritative answer.
If I have a SharePoint 2013, but using the database still as a 2008 R2, so what features we don't have, I mean, comparing with what we're talking about today?
I didn't catch that, did you?
Yeah, sorry.
No, the database is SQL Server 2008 R2.
Yeah, database SQL Server 2008 R2.
We're using SharePoint 2013.
So you're using SharePoint 2013?
Yeah, so for the BI features, which features we do not have?
Okay, so that comes back to my previous point. If you're going to run on SharePoint, you can put the 2012 bits on the SharePoint server. You don't have to run these on your old SQL server.
But if you install a 2008 R2
SQL server,
what do you miss?
What do you miss? You miss power. You don't get PowerView, and you're going to get the old version of PowerPivot for SharePoint. So everything's going to be embedded. Reporting service is all pretty much still there.
Yeah. How about the performance point?
Yeah. Basically, it would be the same as 2010. That's exactly right.
That's a great answer. Okay.
You will still get effective username, because that's a PowerPivot and an Excel services. But yeah, effectively. Okay. Over here?
Yeah. Any drawbacks of installing PowerPivot on a shared SSAS server?
Performance? You would have heard that. Any drawbacks to installing on a shared SSAS, like multiple instances of SSAS?
No, like in an enterprise, you have a shared SSAS server, which is used for other things also, because one thing that PowerPivot does is that it would basically change it into an integrated mode, right?
Yeah. The only difference, it's really just going to install as another instance, as far as analysis services server is concerned.
Oh, so it would be installed as a separate. So you
it's,
would have.
It's definitely going to be another instance, because it's going to be an instance called /PowerPivot, and it's running in SharePoint mode. So that instance has got to be running in SharePoint mode.
Okay.
So the only real drawback is going to be performance. Anyone?